He is the founder of Militant Grind. He is a brilliant, wise man who has written a wonderful book that I truly love. Mine's signed. And his name is Sherman Perryman. And I absolutely love this guy. You guys are going to love him too. Sherman, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be on here. We scheduled it months in advance and I was like, okay, now we're here. So yeah, definitely excited to be here.
You've been up to so much. So I had the honor and privilege of being on your podcast not too long ago. And you've been up to a lot of stuff just since then.
Yeah.
You know, you're working on merchandising and branding and all of this stuff. And for anybody who's actually watching the podcast instead of just listening to it, you can see the background here. It says Militant Grind. Tell me a little bit, just right out of the gate, what is Militant Grind? What's that all about?
Well, Militant Grind is a brand that I wanted to put out that could encompass with just like the everyday individual for what they want to do with their life. So it's like whatever you want to do, be militant, which means be rock solid, be on point, be prompt, you know what I mean? Just like get it done, but then also grind towards what you want, you know? So it's very, very vague, but I feel like it could apply to almost everybody in the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know we're going to get into the book in a little bit, but I just wanted to drop just a little bit of something first. This is so packed with wisdom and focus and drive and wisdom beyond your years, because you're very young still. But I love this book and I have loaned it out a couple of times and told people, don't bend the spine. This is mine. Mm-hmm. You can't keep this. Buy one.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. It's good to hear that because like, I worked so hard on writing the book. I mean, I wrote it over and over and over. And then one night I was like, man, I can't do this anymore. And I just put it out. You know, it's like, man, just put it out. You're done. And then it was like, all right, let's just see what happens. And the amount of like gratitude and people leaving reviews on Amazon and reaching out to me, telling me how it helped them in a dark time and things like that has been like so refreshing. So refreshing.
Yeah. So you had to go through some stuff to get there first. So tell me a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? Where are you originally from?
So I grew up in the South Bay of Los Angeles, but also in South Central in a way. Like my dad's from South Central, so we were always out there. My grandmother lived there, aunt lived there. So we were always out there. And I went to high school in South Central. But I grew up in South Bay area called Carson, which is like a mile from Compton. So I would just say I grew up in the inner city. You know, I'm pretty known everywhere out here.
That's cool. And we talked last time when I was on your show. I think we talked before or after we recorded. But I lived in South Central for a little while, too. And I think you were really shocked by that.
Yeah. I mean, because of where you live. Like, you told me, I was like, okay, I know exactly where you were at. Yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Arlington Way, back behind that McDonald's.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Especially back in the time where you actually lived there. I was like, oh, that was pretty rough back then, you know,
yeah.
But hey, you managed.
It was a little dicey, but the people were wonderful to me. They were so kind. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, South Central really has a bad rap. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. Like I have a great time, you know,
yeah.
Like, I'm going around, I'm seeing my friends I'm at the high school with. Hey, what's up? You know, people I went to church with. Like, that's really my community, you know? So when I'm out there, you know, I love it. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, go to this restaurant, go here. I see everybody that I know. You know what I mean? But it does get a bad rep. But then it's just like, you know, things happen everywhere. But,
right,
you know.
But hey, it's a cool area, though. I mean,
yeah,
there's so much culture steeped in that area that's been there for so long.
Yeah.
I loved it. I, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy for saying that, but I really loved it. The only reason that I moved was because my place didn't have any windows. I was living in somebody's pool house out in the backyard. And I ended up having to commute like 45 minutes to an hour to get to work. I needed to live a little closer than that. I mean, that's kind of nasty for anywhere, but especially LA. So when you had to go through all the stuff that you went through, you overcame a lot of traumas.
Yeah.
What was the stuff that you had to go through? How did it happen?
Well, I grew up, well, you know, the name of my brand is Militant Grind. So I grew up with a military style father who was very, very tough, you know, still to this day. You know, I think that my auntie says that he changed when he went into the army, you know, then he just came out. He just became like a tyrant. So me being ingrained with like a rebel type spirit, we had a lot of clashes. So I was kicked out the house at 14, 16, 18, 21. Like 23. Like I got kicked out so many times I can't even remember. But the first time was 12. And I lived with my sister and I had to take the bus and, you know, go to middle school. And it was like, you know, I was kind of surprised. Well, I'm surprised now at how like strong I was and how I took it, you know, to be so young. Cause I look at kids now that are like the same age I was during that time. And I'm like, damn, I got kicked out the house and had to take a bus and had to walk and be around grown strangers. And, you know, anything could have happened to me back then, you know, because I used to walk home to school. Now I'm like going through different cities, taking a public bus as a little child, you know, walking to my sister's house. And I was just like, wow, man, like you really took that like a champ. You know, I didn't cry. I didn't waver. I didn't cry in the car. I was like, my sister was like, hey, if you stay here, you still have to get up and go to school. And I was like, all right, how do I get there? Take this bus. It was one bus, thank God. But, you know, I just had to do what I had to do. But yeah, I went through fooey a lot with my father. And then, oh yeah, it was a hell of an experience. But if you talk to anyone in my family about that, they'll be like, yeah, him and his dad like really had it out. But I was the one that was like never going to take anything that I think was like oppression. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, when people have control of you, sometimes they abuse it. And me and him always had that clash where I was like, nah, you're not going to play with me like that. You know, like my siblings or whatever, cool. But me and you, hey, even though I'm a kid, I'm not going to tolerate anything that I feel like is unfair, out of the ordinary, you know, whatever. And, you know, he'll tell you like, I'm his most aggressive child. But then like other people tell you, oh, Sherman's cool. But it's like, if if it's injustice, I will definitely, you know, stick up for myself. And like, kind of like, I'll be willing to do whatever it takes to just not feel like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You had a lot of willpower.
Yeah.
You were pretty determined. And I know from my own personal experience and talking to all my guests on the podcast, that when you're growing up in that kind of a tumultuous household, it has an impact on your self-esteem and your self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And you still had that determination deep within your bones. It was like, no, I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I read like a lot of self-help books. I would be like 17 listening to Tony Robbins it was something called like auto suggestion or whatever. Like you'll listen to music and while you're listening to it, it'll give like motivational auto suggestions that you can't hear, but your brain picks it up. I forgot what it's called, but I will always be very much into self-help. And I would go to Barnes and Nobles and hit the self-help aisle and just buy a bunch of books. Like I have two bookshelves in my house. I have audio books. I listen to podcasts and all of that. And the reason why I did that was because I wanted to become a father one day. But I knew that I didn't want my children to feel the way I felt growing up. Like I want to be a better father than what I've had. So it's like, okay, what can I do? You know, then the best thing that, you know, I could do was just fix myself. So I was just steadily into improving myself. Like every day, like I was infatuated with it. You know, like I have to become a better person, but I was becoming a better person to, you know, make money and, you know, hustle and things like that. But let alone all of that stuff that I was researching and, you know, learning about brought me to where I am now, where it's like, now I'm good sharing information and wisdom with people. But that's because ever since I was a kid, that's been the, you know, one of my main things that I was always about. Like, say I will finish up work in class early in high school and pull out my book and start reading my book, you know, or if I'm at work, nothing's going on, I'm reading, you know, like that's how obsessed I was. But I did not know that that obsession would become what this is today. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, man, I just have to get my mind right. I have to get through, you know, this is what it is. Because, you know, when you suffer oppression from your parents and in your household, I feel like that does more damage than anything, because you have no escape. You know, like, there's nowhere you could go. You feel helpless. So what else can you do? And now in my family, like, I'm the one, you know, I have two older sisters, two younger brothers. But when it comes to like certain things, I have like all of my siblings coming to me for that. Like, wow. Guess what happened? This and that. And I'm like the voice of reason for my siblings, you know? But then with that, I'm also the one that'll like go to bat for them and be like, hey, nah, this isn't right, you know? Because some people don't like conflict and they'd rather, you know, not even deal with it. But I'm like, nah, I mean, if you're going to continue with this relationship and you want to continue with this bond, it's best if you just nip things in the bud so it doesn't happen again, so you don't have to repeat this traumatic experience, you know? And so that's the type of person I am. I've always been an advocate for people too. And it's so crazy because, like, I see that in my children now, you know? Like, mm-hmm. So, like, I laugh how similar my children are to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of crazy. But I'm just like,
you're raising them right.
You said what?
Sounds like you're raising them right.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
They're not even take somebody else's crap.
Nah, but that's, I mean, even mine. You know, like, I want them to have a voice. Like, you can stand up for yourself or stand up for what you believe is right. Like, I'm a human being. I make mistakes. I could listen to you. You know, but then the boomer generation, they were kind of like, whatever I say, I don't care if it's wrong. I don't care what you say. Don't tell me nothing. I said it, so it's right. You know, and you're a kid. You have no voice in here. I pay all the bills. You have no power. Get the hell out of my face. You know, and I used to just be like, what the hell? No, like, I'm not going to deal with this. Like, hell no. Like, I would rather die. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not. No. And it's funny because, like, the only person that could really, like, my uncle, my dad's youngest brother, we confide in each other a lot because we have the same zodiac sign. He's a Taurus, I'm a Taurus, and we have similar personalities. And he got into it with my grandfather growing up. But he's more so like, you know, it's just a way you have to communicate and get, like, somebody that's bullheaded to see, you know, and they're not going to tolerate anything that's oppressive. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, we were not going to go out like that.
Yeah. Wow. So did your family ever tell you about anything that your dad had ever gone through that kind of made him this way other than military training? Was it just basic training?
Yeah, no, definitely. The way he was raised too, you know, by his mother and my grandfather and my grandmother. And then my grandmother told me how it went to her and how it went to my great grandmother. And she basically, like, gave me a whole dynamic on how our family is dealing with mental illness.
Wow.
You know, because it's a lot. I mean, I know it's not professionally diagnosed, but it's like, no, I could see it, you know, in a lot of them.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, like a man, one of my great great grandfathers, got with a Native American woman, and he passes white. So he was able to put her in a home and, you know, a crazy house just to do it. And then my great grandmother grew up without a mother, you know what I mean? And
oh my gosh,
it was like colorism within the family.
Wow.
You know, my grandmother got with my grandfather, and he was a tall, dark-skinned, big black man from Texas, and they didn't like him because he was dark and they were all light-skinned. And, you know, it was just a lot of stuff that, I mean, they were all black, but it was like, you know, my grandmother and her family was all light, you know, so they look different than my grandmother's grandfather's side. But then all of the kids that my grandparents had together all came out, you know, with color. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, their grandparents were like, oh, don't get in the sun too long and all of these different things. You know, it's like it's a lot of torment that they had to go through. But then I'm more so like, okay, how can I stop this? You know, what can I do to actually not put this, you know, put my kids through things like this? And I'm more so like, if you don't look that entity, whatever it may be, demon, person, whatever, if you're spiritual, whatever, in the face and confront it and let it know, hey, I'm not going to tolerate this. You have to come with me with a certain type of respect. Nothing is going to change. So even though my dad did go through things when he grew up and my mom said, well, you know, your daddy went through this and he went through that. And I'm like, shit, I went through stuff too. should I go around and do this to my kids? No. And I'm guaranteed we probably went through more stuff than what he went through growing up, for sure. For sure, I would bet my bottom dollar on that. Like, if I have my younger brother on this podcast, he could talk to you for at least 3 to 4 hours about our childhood trauma straight, because it still bothers some of them, you know, like it happened yesterday. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, some people are stronger to overcome that trauma, but some people, it still haunts them and affects them as an adult. And so I'm like, you know, just because one of us may be okay, I still empathize for the rest of us that aren't okay with the traumas that we went through, you know, because we may think that it may not affect us, but it affects us somewhere in our decision making when it comes to our daily lives.
Yeah. And you and I are pretty close in age. So thinking about it practically for just a moment, what do you think the biggest difference is between our generations and previous generations? Was it the fact that they didn't have those self-help books? Was it the fact that they didn't talk about mental health? What's the biggest difference?
I feel like that generation was spoiled. You know, like they didn't really have to go through this type of stuff that we had to go through. Like, say, well, you were born in the 80s, right?
70s, but yeah,
70s.
Close enough.
Okay. Well, I was born in 86, and that was during the time where, like, the crack epidemic in LA was, like, you know, going crazy. So there was a lot of broken homes. And I'll talk about that in a book, you know, a lot of broken homes, father's absent, things like that. So that was a whole different time of growing up in LA when, you know, it wasn't crack and, you know, it was just earth, wind, and fire and bail bond. You know, everybody just dressed nice. I say, I look at my father's yearbook from when he graduated from the same high school I went to Crenshaw High School. So I have his 70s yearbook and I'm looking at mine and I'm like, damn, these are two totally different types of people. You know, like they have a chess club, a swim team, everybody's smiling, everybody's happy and high-fiving. And in my generation, everybody wants to be a thug and, you know, wants to be tough because the gang violence, because of the, you know, the crack epidemic, is like, you know, we're the aftermath of that. So it's like a lot of these kids didn't have no direction and stuff like that. So I feel like that may be one of them. And then the income inequality, like college is super high, jobs aren't paying, you know, you can't work as a security guard and afford rent anymore. And so we just went through so much where it's like we started to empathize with people and each other that don't have what we have. You know what I mean? It's like back then you could work at, you know, the post office and buy a home and take care of your family. You cannot do that right now. You can barely take care of yourself if you work at the post office, you know? But back then it was like, you know, my dad was just a teacher and he had a 4-bedroom house with, you know, in Carson with, you know, that was pretty nice. You know what I mean? Now it's like if he took his same career and tried to buy in that same neighborhood now, he can't do it. You know, so it's like the viewpoints are a little different. You know, like they had it, not to say they had it easy, but they had like access to a lot more resources and help than we have. You know, like we're in college debt like crazy. It's like, damn, you know, like everybody, all races, all cultures, all of us are just struggling to survive in this new generation, you know, and it's hard for us to look down on anybody because of the stuff that we went through, like, you know, finishing college, next thing you know, you're in the recession trying to find a job and trying to find work and survive for yourself. Then it's like all of those years when you're supposed to be developing a skill set to help you survive, you have no opportunity. So it's like, you know, usually when people graduate, you know, they have a job, they have opportunity, they have, you know, they're working up in their career. Now we're starting late in our career because there was nothing available, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the things that keeps on hitting me is I was living up in Victorville in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you were 12, you were six. I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
That was when the Rodney King riots happened. Did that affect your life and your family?
Going to LA and seeing like the buildings burn down and stores burn down and smoke from the city, heck yeah, that was crazy. One of our favorite restaurants called Pop's Kitchen burned down. You know, so like, yeah, it was, I mean, you know, some family members came up in the riots, you know, like got goods and stuff like that. That was probably like the best thing, but it was just crazy. Just like, and it actually started on my birthday. As a matter of fact.
Are you kidding? Oh, what a horrible birthday present.
Yeah, right. April 29th, 1992, I think.
92.
Yeah. So that's like, it literally started on my sixth birthday. So it was just crazy just seeing all of that. But I really didn't have a sense of understanding. But it was just like, you know, like, what is going on? Like, why is the store burned down? And why did the buildings look like this? Yeah, you know, but no, I mean, nobody sat us down and taught us, but it was just kind of wild just observing that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was living up in Victorville, just north of the valley. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching it all on the news as a 12-year-old kid going, those people are killing each other. There's rioting in the streets and there's bottles and broomsticks going through store windows. And this is insane. These people are not okay. They're in danger. Why can't we do something? And my little 12-year-old brain, I was so naive. I just did not understand why we couldn't do something like drive down to LA and tell people it's okay. You don't have to fight.
Right.
That's not what it was about. That's not what started it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into too much of it, but for the people that are listening or watching, definitely look up Rodney King riots, educate yourself on what this was, why it existed, why it happened, because this is an important piece of our history, not just yours and mine, Thurman, but here in the country. This is important for people to know. It was $1 billion worth of damage. There were over 12,000 people arrested. This went from April 29th of 92 to May 4th of 92. This was several days, it felt like forever, of violence and anger and frustration and people revolting against everything that had been happening and for what happened to Rodney King.
Right.
I see.
Yeah, people are just angry, you know, when you have a group. I mean, but that happens everywhere in the world. Like in France today, you know, people are angry. Yeah. So they're revolting. You know, that's history, period. So I don't look at it as like a bad thing. It's more so like, damn, like, you know, these people must have been pretty fed up and angry with whatever they were going through. And then they just decided to tear stuff up. You know, that's an act of anger. But that spans like all the way down to the Boston Tea Party, you know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And the Boston Tea Party was started over taxes. And how much do we pay in taxes now?
Too much.
Yeah. It was started because they raised the taxes from what was it, 1% to 2%?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
It was something insane like that. And they revolted and threw all the tea off. Yeah, it was stupid. So I'm glancing at your book again, my signed copy, because check that out. Your five pillars. I love that you put love first, because to me, that is the first one that most people think of.
Mm-hmm.
Love, honor, strength, discipline, and wisdom. I know these have all played a major role in your life, but how have these all played a major role in the lives of your children?
Oh, a lot. Yeah. Cause I say I'm a firm daddy, you know, like, but then at the same time, my kids come up to me every day and kiss me, you know, I'm not soft on them at all whatsoever. Like they know to listen to me and like, oh, you know, like I'm not like the cool dad. Like, hey, put on your shoes. It's like, put on your shoes. Let's go walk. Come on. Like they fall. I'm like, get up. But at the same time, they know that I love them, you know? And so I've learned to, you know, show love, discipline, honor your children, give them wisdom, give them strength, make sure they're strong. And all of those will kind of, you know, shape them up to be a good person, because I feel like a lot of us, especially somebody like me, were taught to just instill discipline, fear, you know, but there really wasn't any love. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to say I love you, you know, or motivate people with love without inputting like fear into them, you know? So I motivate my children with love. Like they have no doubt that I love them. You know what I mean? Like if anybody does, but it's kind of a different dynamic that I'm observing, because it's like, I didn't grow up with that. You know, my father didn't say, I love you every day and hugged us and made sure they were okay. Like, my kids wouldn't even go to sleep if I don't go in there and give them a hug. You know, Daddy, I want to say goodnight. Daddy, I want to kiss. Daddy, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's kind of surreal to even know that I've like nurtured that type of environment with my children. You know, but then if I say, hey, let's go in the garage, we're going to do some push-ups, squats, and you know, this is something. Yes, let's go. Okay, let's go. I'm excited, you know. But then it's like if they see me doing it and that's an embodiment of me loving myself, they want to do the same thing. You know, I took my oldest daughter to the gym and she had a time. Like, when are we gonna go back? Like, I've been watching my dad work out ever since I was a baby. So now I finally get the chance to, you know, learn, see him and learn some things. So it's like, you know, like they don't look at self-improvement like a chore. They look at it more so like, man, my dad do it. I know he loves me. I know I love myself. So I want to do it too. Because I'm telling you, like as a kid, I'll be like, oh God, you know, but it's like there was something lacking that would make me want to do that. And to me, that was like the love. Because if you don't get love expressed to you from someone else, it's kind of hard for you to love yourself. You know, but now I see the way my kids take care of themselves and they love themselves, but I inputted that love into them, you know, ever since they were yay high. You know,
How old are you kids now?
10, 7, 5, and 2.
My goodness, you got a house full.
Yeah. Yeah. My prize and
Oh.
joy is my daughter just made the basketball team. She's super excited. You know, my oldest, you know, took a picture, sent it to me. You know, it's like that's what I want to breed. You know, like just good-hearted human beings that know discipline, hard work, strength, resilience, like all of that. You know, so I'm glad that that's actually happening. Like I stuck to my guns, and now it's actually like happening for them. You know,
You have a beautiful family. We're friends on
thank you.
Facebook.
Oh yeah, right. You see it all.
So, my last question, always my favorite. What is one thing that you now really love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
I would say my desire to probably be the best version of me so I could give that to the world. I would say that. And that's nothing. That all deals with like my mentality, but yeah.